bit. Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
The Escape Pod on Joy and via podcast at joy.org.au/escape pod.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Escape Pod with Russ Masterton and Joe Pryor.
How are you? How was your trip away? Where did you go? Tell the world.
Oh, I was in Egypt.
How magnificent. Were you Queen of the Nile, Cleopatra or Nefertiti?
All three.
Woo!
Yeah, I was there long enough to try on all the different tiaras. And I must say, there are a lot of tiaras in downtown Cairo.
They do like them, don't they?
They certainly do. And the food. I mean, how they manage to stuff those pigeons with all that rice, it's amazing.
They do, you know, that Middle Eastern food and the Bedouin food is all just so yummy and scrumptious, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I know that obviously you mentioned the word Egypt at the moment and people look at you and say, are you crazy? Mm. But if you are careful and if you have an itinerary that takes in, you know, perhaps Alexandria, Cairo, down to Aswan and back, and you steer clear of the Sinai, perfectly safe.
Absolutely. And, you know,
a couple of incidents the last couple of days that were unfortunate, but I can't possibly imagine that as an Australian tourist you would have a problem.
No, and I agree with you. I did a trip myself to Egypt in October and we stuck to the classics, which, as you mentioned, were Alexandria, Cairo, Luxor, Aswan, and the army's there, the tourist police is there, and look, quite frankly, we just stuck with our guide and we had a magical holiday. There's nobody there. You get to see the most extraordinary sights and yes, it's as if they were put there just for you.
I think that's the key, though. When you are traveling to an area where you know there's not going to be a lot of tourists, it behoves you to really have a guide and a driver, because you can't blend in and just follow along with everybody else. And yep, it's all going to be in the Lonely Planet guidebook, etc., etc., but it's a little bit more difficult to get around unless you do speak Arabic, because you're not hearing and watching other tours and other tourists do their thing. So you really do need to, I think, put a little bit of that money that you're definitely going to save, because at the moment it's about 5 Egyptian pounds
correct
to the dollar.
Correct.
Yep. So the money that you're definitely going to save on accommodation and other on-ground costs, put into having a guide and a driver.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing Egypt without an Egyptologist anyway. What they know about their history is amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, what were you doing there, and why did you leave your prior family and head off to the Middle East for Chrissy?
Well,
what happened?
I certainly was not in the good books with the prior family. However, I did sneak away on the 23rd. I was invited actually to spend Christmas with some guests from the Escape Pod.
How exciting.
Which was pretty exciting.
What were they doing in Egypt?
So Mr. Ahmed Hafouch, who, as we know, is an extraordinary jazz vocalist, had invited me to attend a concert that he gives in Luxor on the 2nd of January every year.
That man brings dulcet tones to an all new level, doesn't he?
I describe him as a cross between Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra.
Yes, yes, I agree.
And in addition to that, when you travel with Ahmed Hafouch in Egypt, he is a celebrity. So one just prepares oneself for the onslaught of fans and people who know him. Every single place, even the Uber drivers know who he is.
Well, you know, for those of you who know Jo, you know she would know how to do celebrity. So you would have had your, you know, 16 bags of wardrobe packed, and you would have looked glamorous with the, you know, the Dior glasses on and God knows what else as you flushed through or you know, flew through the foyer of the Fairmont Hotel in Cairo. Am I right?
You are absolutely spot on. It's the place to wear a gown or two, and people really do respect it.
Yes.
Because not everybody dresses up anymore. Although I must say, the Egyptians do take some time to dress well for occasions. It's some of the other Arab guests who perhaps don't.
Weather-wise, this time of the year in Cairo, was it glorious?
It is absolutely perfect. It's about between 20 to 23 degrees during the day. So it's great weather for walking. The only thing is, in the evening, it is chilly, and the desert wind is indeed a desert wind. So even during the day, if they say it's going to be windy in the shade, you will be cold. So layering up is definitely the way to go. And look, if you've always wanted to see the pyramids, now's the time to go. As I know you said in October, I can only reiterate it. Go now. Be careful, but go.
Now tell me two things.
Yes.
What was it like going inside the Great Pyramid?
It was an extraordinary sense. Apart from the fact that there's no signage, no safety, and the hand railings have been there obviously since 1920, and the walkway is a very steep duckboard that has sort of like tram tracks going across it. So you do have to go sideways. And it is one person at a time. It is a one-way situation. But the feeling of actually being inside such an extraordinary building.
Yeah. What is it, 5,000 years old?
About five. And you all of a sudden appreciate the symmetry, because on the outside, of course, the original beautiful alabaster finishing is long gone, so yes. It doesn't look quite as symmetrical as perhaps you would think. But when you're inside, there's no escaping it, and you just have this sense of the ages. It's extraordinary.
That glorious artwork.
But not if you're claustrophobic. Don't go.
No, it's not. It definitely isn't for you if you're claustrophobic. Yeah. And the other thing that I'd like you to tell our Joy Travel listeners is the desert drive and what you did for dinner that night. That sounded awesome to me.
I think we might chat about that a little bit later.
All right.
What do you think? I think because we've got a most amazing guest in the studio.
We do.
And it's not all about me.
Well, yeah, it's about both of you, really, isn't it?
I think we do have in the studio today Mr. Ian Thompson. Welcome, Ian, to the Escape Pod.
Thank you very much.
You are our aviation expert,
yes.
And we like to touch base with you on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And you gave me my big start on Joy FM.
Well, isn't that just amazing? You just never know. This is a big city. You never know your luck in Melbourne, do you?
Yes, and I came across Russ on my Taste of Radio course.
Yes, we go back.
We do.
We go back to Leanie's course. It was fabulous, wasn't it?
It certainly is. And actually, that's something else. You know, if you've been thinking about how you might like to try something new in the new year, doing the Joy Taste of Radio course is absolutely an outstanding thing to do.
I totally agree. It's been a fun year. I mean, you know, from a personal perspective, I met great people.
It's fun, isn't it? For me personally, I love the on-air banter and how it's a community radio station. We get to talk about everything. But for me, the hours of terror about learning how to use the panel and was I going to push the right button. And I tell you what, I love this thing in front of me now. And, you know, I want to push all the buttons right now. How do you go with paneling, Ian?
Struggle.
Is it like driving a plane?
I used to be an air traffic controller. It sort of takes me back a little bit, but I've pushed the wrong buttons, including not turning microphones off.
Do you know, we're always looking for the hyperdrive. That's what it comes down to. All of us, we sit in front of the panel here at Joy 94.9, and it's just like we're in the Millennium Falcon. It's our turn to be Han Solo, isn't it?
It is, and we all love it.
We certainly do. Now, it is the season where people have been travelling. Ian, do you want to bring us up to date with airline safety ratings? Because there's been a bit in the paper recently.
Indeed, yeah. So in the past week, an organisation called Airlines Ratings comes out with their best and worst of the year.
It's a bit like the Economist Big Mac rating, isn't it?
Yeah.
For airlines.
Yeah. So if you're looking at the safest airlines, a large number of them sort of fly through our area. You know, Qantas got the gong as the best, but there's certainly like Air New Zealand, Emirates, Etihad, Virgin Australia, they all got a big tick. And even on the low-cost side, Jetstar was good.
Who are the airlines then that perhaps you might think twice about when you're booking
flight? Well, there certainly wasn't any mention of Tiger, so maybe they're...
Have they snuck under Singapore Airlines' wings, do you think?
That sort of linked in with Virgin now, but I doubt it. And the reason why I doubt it is that Jetstar is seen distinct from Qantas, so they have a similar type of relationship. Tiger's got a similar type of relationship with Virgin, so I doubt it. Actually, the one that's kind of interesting right now is Thailand.
Thai Airways.
You mean Garuda or Thai?
The whole basket of Thai airlines. What's happened is the FAA, that's the Federal Aviation Administration of the United States, has downgraded Thailand's aviation safety programs. And that impacts, among the others, Thai Airways.
So does any other airline, any other carrier, use Thailand as a hub for maintenance, or is it only the national carrier?
I think it's only Thai Airways. But what it means for Thai Airways is that they can't increase their schedules or number of flights into the USA.
It happened to Garuda a long time ago, didn't it? Where they weren't allowed to fly into Europe and other ports. And really, it is quite
smarten
a power.
Smarten them up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're a very good airline now. I've flown them only last year. But the FAA are very powerful, aren't they? If they downgrade an airline, then it basically has flow-on effects to where they can and can't fly around the world. So were you surprised with Qantas's pick? I always laugh with Qantas. Is it because Qantas touch wood and we hope that they never do? Is it because they have never had a crash?
I think they're a great airline, and I enjoy flying on them.
I'm very proud to fly the Red Kangaroo.
Yeah, it's nice to be on board. There's that feeling of I'm going home when you actually get on the jet rather than having to wait till you land here in our country.
Yeah, that's a nice marketing catchphrase, I think.
We're sounding a bit parochial, though. But it is a good airline.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Who were you surprised to see on the list?
I think the sort of the normal ones come up. Actually, overall, the sort of their best airline was, all things considered, was Air New Zealand.
And they've started to increase their flights now into South America.
Yeah, they've just started flights
so
to Buenos Aires.
Started to put a little bit of competition in, because previously it was a one world
Qantas
LAN.
Yeah,
yeah. So they're a very innovative airline, and they're very hungry.
They were Rod Eddington spent some time with New Zealand, didn't he?
He did. He was their CEO before they took over Ansett, I think, from memory. This is all very hazy, but Air New Zealand, they're trying to expand. They're following Qantas with their Dallas hub, and they've got a Houston hub now.
What's sort of changing is the advent of the 787.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to, what it gives the airlines is a lot more range. And also sort of the size of aircraft enables greater point-to-point rather than hub type of operations. So you're getting flights, traditionally it was sort of like, New Zealand or Auckland to Los Angeles, but now you're getting sort of San Francisco pop up. You're starting to see other, like from Australia, you're starting to get Houston starting to come into the...
So there's greater choice now for consumers.
There are, and as I say, it's a greater range of point to point rather than having to go to the mainstream hubs like Los Angeles and
Chicago, New York.
Yeah, the traditional ones.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Escape Pod with Russ Masterton, Joe Pryor, and our very special guest this afternoon, aviation expert, consultant extraordinaire, Mr. Ian Thompson.
Queen of the skies, as we
now,
like to call him.
let's just backtrack a little bit. Foreigner, I want to know what love is. What was that song choice all about?
Well, just a little bit of a story about that.
Share it.
Oh no! It was a. I had to reach out for suggestions when you said, what are your three favourite songs?" And I was diving into my CD collection, wondering what they were, and I got a suggestion.
It's a good track.
Yes, it is. It is.
We all love a bit of Foreigner.
Yes.
Well, we
urgent.
Love.
Wasn't it urgent?
We all love foreigners.
We do definitely love foreigners here on the Escape Pod.
We do. Now we've actually had a question come in. To put to our aviation expert, there's been some discussion that the A380 and the Dreamliner might be problematic with regards to resale for other airlines. So when they've come to the end of their life with somebody like Qantas with the A380, they're so large and they take so much maintenance to keep them going. What other airlines could possibly pick them up?
I don't necessarily think it's not the maintenance issue, but you're looking at a probably useful life of about a dozen years.
Okay.
So
it's not like the smaller planes that get sold on.
No, and just remember, and the reality is a lot of them are leased. Okay, so...
That's a whole other show, isn't it? Yeah. Airline
leasing. So what you're looking at is for an airline, you're wanting to get the best available, shall we say, the platform, mm-hmm. and that include, you know, and that's a whole range of capabilities that the aircraft has. But also, but right now, it's the lowest cost of operation.
Right.
So particularly with fuel, so you've got fuel efficient engines, you've got really light airframes. So really, you're looking at after that 12 years.
So you think
you'd be looking to turning it round. The residual value is actually probably fairly low, and because they're
so would anybody else pick up a second-hand A380?
Sure, there will be others, some out there, but at the end of the day, the demand is not going to be high because where the value and the efficiency in operation is with the new aircraft,
yes,
and the new engines. And after that sort of, you know, 10 or 12 years, you're into major refit, well, major maintenance reworking that takes the aircraft offline.
So do you think
months.
They're just going to go into scrap then?
No, that's what a lot of them do, but they've got to be able to be turning them around. There'll be a small second-hand market out there, sure, but if you're looking at running your fleet as efficiently as you can, and that involves, you know, very low ongoing operating costs, but also really lowering your maintenance costs and having as small an outage as you can on with the aircraft out of maintenance. Yeah, you're looking to turn those things around.
It is absolutely extraordinary when you think of it. I know Emirates, for one, have got 67 of these double-decker A380 aircraft. And I always am fascinated by the life of one of these planes. Years ago when I was a young buck and just starting my overseas trips, I used to be afraid of flying. And the reason I was scared of flying was that I couldn't understand how this thing
became
got in
airborne.
The air and stayed in the air. So maybe you could answer that question for me in a minute, is how they do get up in the air and stay up in the air. And the other thing I'm fascinated by is places like Iran who don't have contracts with Boeing in the United States and Airbus in France. You know, on my last trip to Iran, they're operating 747s and Airbuses from the 1970s and the 1980s, and they managed to keep these things clicking over all the time. So they do have life after commercial aviation in the West, don't they?
Yeah, they do, and they do end up in places like, you know, third world countries.
Yes. Mm. So, but you actually think they'll be able to cope with the A380?
Oh, look, I don't know. They're going to be looking to, as I say, I'm from an airline perspective, my bet is that they're looking to turn those things around. Yeah.
And the next subject I think we should probably catch everybody up on is Malaysian Airlines Flight 370.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are really interesting. One is...
Where is it?
Yeah. You've got your snorkel and flippers and dive in and
have
a start
looking.
Here
I was thinking we'd found it, but you said there's no definitive site of the wreckage.
They're a long way, I think, from finding where the actual the full aircraft rests. You're getting some debris washing up in places like Mauritius, but... it's still looking at a needle in the haystack. But there's two sort of issues that are kind of interesting. One is the what the international aviation community is doing around mandatory flight tracking. And the second thing is what's happening with Malaysian Airlines itself. In terms of the push by the aviation community, it's, you recall that the Malaysian flight had a rogue pilot, or supposedly had a rogue pilot who turned off the transponder so no one could see where the aircraft was.
Yes.
Now, what's happened is, over the past sort of year or more, is that there's been moves by the aviation community to make automatic reporting by the aircraft mandatory.
Yep.
They've still got a bit of a way to go, but in terms of operations around Australia and, say, over the Pacific and most over say, the Indian Ocean, that's coming into play. And what it effectively means is that the aircraft are sending out signals every 15 minutes. So
the likelihood of another incident is we're putting things in place to reduce the risk.
We are. To be honest, Joe, always at risk by a rogue pilot. You know, you've got to hope that the person up front values their life as much as you do.
Yes.
And if not, as happened with the German wings, you got trouble. Mm.
Absolutely.
And I don't think, you know, you could throw all the safety and what have you
it
around
seems
it.
To be boss.
If,
really,
if someone's determined to
put an end to themselves, you've all got a problem.
And it seems to be more and more the case with pilot error. I mean, I know the AirAsia flight that went down in Indonesia only around about this time last year, that once again was a terrible storm that the pilots had to try to fight their way out of, but they didn't have the training to fight their way out of.
That has brought
up an awful lot of discussion about how long pilots should actually be on autopilot for, how long the flight, and should they, during those long stages of autopilot, actually take control and be off autopilot and practicing, because so to reduce the incidents that happened.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I mean, it's fine to have all of these automated systems, but, you know, when the going gets tough, you want the tough to get going.
It's a really interesting dilemma, and it's been around the for pilots for a long time, or the cockpit for a long time, and it's starting to hit the from the air traffic controller perspective, because what's happening now is, because the aircraft are flying on what we call escort random routes, so they take advantage of favorable upper air winds.
Yep, anything to get
to reduce the fuel cost.
Yes,
but the problem from an air traffic controller perspective is that the traditional tools you had to determine whether aircraft are in conflict or not no longer apply. So you're looking at sophisticated technology or software technology to determine whether the aircraft will actually be in conflict.
Yeah,
position at the same level.
Yeah, being in the same airspace.
Right. But it starts to come. The same dilemma as the pilots have is that you're into saying, well, you know, you're reliant on the technology to tell you whether you've got the there's a conflict or not. If it's not telling you it, or you miss it, well, then you've got a real big problem.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Back to Bob from Templestowe now. Bob has said that his partner's been flying Jetstar. Every flight he was booked on was cancelled, and he was forced to wait for another. What are, Ian Thompson, our aviation expert, what are your thoughts on airlines like Jetstar doing this to customers?
I hate it.
Yeah.
And
it's very annoying.
Being bold.
Be bold.
You get what you pay for. And look, I try and avoid Jetstar at all costs. I'm tall.
Yes,
yeah,
of course.
You fly on that, fly on them, and I, you know, my knees are around my neck. I feel like I've got a sore back.
It's just not worth it, is it? And sometimes when you think about it, you've got to go and see the osteopath after a flight.
Yeah.
You may sort of paid for a decent.
Yeah. But what's sort of happening is, you know,
but Qantas
are being
route.
Well, they're becoming more and more prominent. Like going to Perth, it's not just all Qantas now. You'll be looking at Jetstar, plus others. So I think sad reality is you've got to start getting used to that's That's probably a more of an upcoming reality for us all to
face. I don't even think Qantas fly down to Launceston anymore. I think you can only go Jetstar. You can get a Qantas flight into Hobart.
It's not so bad, you know, like, you know, what, an hour, maybe, say, a couple of hours. That, you know, that's probably doable. But when you're starting to look 3 hours or more.
So your advice to Bob and his partner is perhaps choose another airline.
I think the situation with the discounted airlines is such that, oh, well, we haven't got enough passengers on this flight, or for whatever reason they cancel the service. And they can do that because, you know, I'm not sure what the official ruling is, but it's 3, 4, 5 hours later they've got another service going to their destination, so they just shove everybody on there and try to do as much damage control as possible. But unfortunately, they're not very good at their they call it service recovery in the aviation industry. And airlines like Virgin and Qantas and the bigger well-known carriers are very, very good at their service recovery, but the discounted airlines, just service recovery is in the toilet.
But actually, related, have you used the Terminal 4 at Melbourne?
No, not
My
yet.
God.
No.
I
tell me all
I
about it.
I did a flight
it.
To Sydney in December, so I was up Qantas and had to come back Jetstar.
Right.
Anyway, arrived at Terminal 4, it was like a day's hike. There's no travelators.
That's what everyone says.
It's brutal.
Maybe that's
end?
How we're going to get our train. It's going to be from Terminal 4 to the car park. So
you need it from the actual gate to the actual road.
Terminal 4
distance.
Is where those sheds used to be.
They've built a new terminal there, and families in particular with kids.
Do you warn your clients, Russ?
Well, I have to say that the amount of effort that goes into a cancelled airline ticket by a discounted carrier, reissuing, rebooking accommodation and everything, we choose not to book them for basically a time factor and we try to steer our customers to where they're going to get the best service recovery. So it's, you know, we don't want to have a call from a customer saying Jetstar's cancelled their flight and it's up to me to look after it. We want to get a call from a customer saying Qantas has cancelled their flight. They've put me up into a lovely hotel. I'm booked on tomorrow's flight. I just needed to let you know so you can update blah, 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 blah. That to me is service. And Joe, you're a Flying Kangaroo fan, so you would have to agree that you know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah,
definitely.
And Terminal 4 is exactly into that category. Yeah.
And that takes us back to, you know, somebody like Steve Huey that we've had on the show, who has the I Fly Flat business that helps you consolidate your points. And, you know, if you are flying, and if you are flying regularly, it perhaps does pay to make sure that you're not leaving any money on the table when it comes to your points, and that you're using them wisely, so that in fact you can be with an airline that you can upgrade with, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And look, I get the whole concept of the discounted carrier. I'm sure you do too, Ian. Mm. But you know, always rule in thumb when you're flying anywhere is, you know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Actually, because it's interesting, the recovery comment was well made, because I actually missed my flight on Qantas.
Ooh.
Going up to Sydney. I couldn't find a park in the car park, believe it or not, and I was sort of like 5 minutes late to the final check-in. Mm. But it cost me only $150 to rebook. Now, if I'd gone the low-cost route, I'd have forfeited the whole lot.
Yes. Yes, so there definitely are advantages sometimes in, I think low cost, if you're prepared to take, it's about risk and your appetite for risk. If you're prepared to take that on, and, you know, if money's tight and you know, you're young and you're backpacking and everything, it's great. But perhaps as we get a little bit older, you're a bit more seasoned traveller, it's just, well, it's not the option you want to take.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Thompson,
yes.
2015 has finished. What would be your travel tip that you've picked up during 2015 that we can all use in 2016?
I'm just fastidious about old bags. Old tags on bags. I always get rid of them. I have gone through.
Because otherwise your bag could end up somewhere else.
I've been through a run of being surprised that my bag turned up in the right airport. And I mean, it was just, I was losing the bags all the time. So absolutely fastidious to make sure that...
You might need the template of my letter.
What's that? Yes.
For when
yes,
the bags
and then I'm... yes, business class, here I come.
Yeah.
Shh.
It's a big secret. So that's a very good tip, though, is to remove your used baggage tags. And I've certainly got one from this 2015, and that is to travel with your yoga mat.
Ah.
I needed to bring a couple of fragile gifts with me on this trip. What do you think a yoga mat's for? Wrap them up inside.
And Good idea.
It really is quite shockproof.
So did you do yoga in Egypt?
I did do yoga in Egypt.
Oh, because I'm a yoga exponent myself.
Well, do you know, it was amazing.
But do you do nude yoga?
Now, that's only when your luggage doesn't turn up.
That's a first-class upgrade.
I'm sorry, but you guys baited me for that one. I'm terribly sorry.
We did. But, do you know, there was something quite magic at about 5.30 in the morning, my yoga mat out in the hotel room in Zamalek, which is one of the islands within the city of Cairo, and just watching the full moon as it came around the corner of one of the other buildings, that does make you feel pretty special.
Yeah.
Definitely worth getting up for. And, of course, you know, you think you can just take on the day, come what may, pyramids, camels, Cairo traffic, God knows what. Internet, no internet.
A bit of yoga will get you through the day, no matter where you are in the world.
Now, Russ, have you got a rant for this
week?
Look,
I absolutely have a rant.
Or do you have a travel tip? You can have a choice.
It's actually more of a travel tip, I suppose.
We like those.
Yeah. Look, I'd like to talk about, and this is a little bit of ongoing from what we've just been discussing with regarding airlines, and so a perfect format for this is what customers go through with regarding getting refunds and or changing your airline ticket. So these days, basically, what does
happen...
Can you
actually do that anymore?
You can do that. Some tickets are non-refundable, but what people don't know, and these are the tips that I hope people take away with them.
All right, everybody.
So one, if you have an international airfare and it says non-refundable on the international airfare, they are quite right. What is non-refundable is the airfare itself. However, all of
taxes?
The taxes you pay are fully refundable.
Oh, good. Good tip. Okay. Now, how do you get them back?
You have to apply to the airline or you go and see your travel agent and they will apply for these to come back. So don't just walk away from...
Don't leave money on the table.
Yeah, if someone says to you, this airfare is non-refundable, you should say to them, yes, but what about the taxes every single time? Now, the other thing that people need to know when you...
You've got to stop.
Yes.
We do have to... A big thank you to Lachlan in South Yarra, who has just joined Joy as a member.
We love you, Lachlan.
Welcome to Midsummer and to Joy.
You've just joined the Escape Pod Mile High Club.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, point number two.
Point number two is don't impulse buy and think carefully when you're travelling. To change an airline ticket these days costs $250 plus the difference in the airfare. So if you're just thinking... Oh,
and
you know
even
what?
If the airfare's less expensive, you don't get the refund, do
exactly,
you?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking, oh, I might buy this now and I'll change it later and it's not going to cost me... It does. It costs you lots and lots of money. And the sore point for everybody in the aviation industry / travel industry, refunds take 8 to 12 weeks. It's the way it is. Airlines don't change it. It's 3 months before you're going to get a refund. My biggest tip is if you do this online yourself, you do it all yourself and you will have a nervous breakdown. Get your travel agent to do it. Travel agents are professionals. They do this every day. Make them do all of the hard work for you. You don't want to be arguing with airlines about refunds. Travel agents are experts at this. They argue with airlines every day on your behalf.
Don't you professionally advocate rather than argue?
We do. We're not professional. We are travel.
There's nothing adversarial. It's just a lovely conversation.
We like to tell you where to go.
and so you look forward to the journey.
We do. We hope you all look forward to the journey. But they're my travel tips. Don't impulse buy. Expect if you're going to ever change an airline ticket, it's going to cost you big bucks. Try to avoid having to cancel a ticket because it will take 3 months. So if you urgently need your money, it's not going to happen. Travel agent, get a travel agent and take out travel insurance and then you can't go wrong.
Well, that's the Russ's rants and tips for today's show in the Escape Pod.
Yeah, and the other one that I found this,
I knew there'd be something else
funny this week was a friend. You know, you can't shut me up when I get going, Joe. Even though you tried. The people that fly on Jetstar who forget to buy their bags and they get to the airport and they're told they're going to have to pay $260 to buy a bag. They then go out to the car park and take all of their clothes out of the bag and they wear everything on board the flight so they don't have to pay the extra money. Here comes the Michelin Man.
Mr. Ian Thompson, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Yeah,
Ian.
Good to see you both.
Come back, Ian. Absolutely. We want you back. Yeah. And welcome home from Egypt to our Queen of the Nile, Jo Pryor, looking fabulous as always. It's so good to have you back in the studio, my friend.
Fabulous to be home. It really is. I love doing call-ins from countries abroad, but the time difference does my head in sometimes, I have to admit.
It's poor 5 a.m. starts.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.